So for those of you that weren't on the call last time, my voice is new to this. This is my second quarterly investment call with the new treasurer and CFO of the UUA. It's been really great to be here and to be part of our investment committee and socially responsible investment committee. We have an agenda today presented by Kathleen Gaffney, chair of our investment committee. Kathy Mulvey, who runs our socially responsible investment committee, will chime in as warranted, I know. So far this year, and when I say year, I mean our fiscal year, which runs from July through June. It's been a bit of a challenging start. Kathleen will talk about that a little bit, although markets were much better in October. As Susan mentioned, we had our investment committee and SRI committee meeting a couple of weeks ago, and it was extremely productive, and we'll give a report out from that too. And I think that's probably all you want to hear from me before I turn it over to Kathleen. So I just wanted to let everybody know I'm going to mute your line. We will open it up for Q&A at the end, and I'll unmute everybody then. But it just makes the call go much better if I eliminate all the background noise. So that's it for me. I'll turn it over to Kathleen.
Thank you, Andy. I'm still hearing a fair amount of that ambient noise, so people could mute their phones.
All guests have been muted.
Okay, great. So I'm going to briefly touch on performance. We had a very productive and successful meeting on November 19th, and a lot was accomplished that both Kathy and I want to share with everyone. So let's first address performance. If you turn to slide 3, as Andrew mentioned, it was a challenging quarter. The markets have been going back and forth, vacillating between concerns about the trade war and the strength of the economy and the level of interest rates. But as he also noted, we had a strong October, particularly led by the equity markets. And I think this may continue to be the pattern for some time. But remember, short-term performance is not what we're oriented towards. We will take a look at what caused the underperformance. But if you look on slide 3, you'll see, yes, we were at the bottom of the quarter, but the one-year return, we are ranked 52nd. That's median level. And for the three-year performance, the fund is ranked 15th, so in the top quartile against our peers. And our peers are all endowments, regardless of guidelines, within a size of 50 to 250 million. So I think that puts us in very good standing. And if you look at page 4, what you'll see are the annual returns from 2009 to 2018. And this gives you a sense of the back and forth in the market. But over the long term, we've maintained at least median results, if not second quartile and above. On pages 5, 6, and 7, actually 8, so pages 5 through 8, we are going to look at the actual performance of our managers. And I'm going to focus primarily on fiscal year-to-date and the one-year return. Fiscal year-to-date, we are lagging mainly due to the most recent quarter. And if you go down the column that's headed by fiscal year to date, looking at the equity performance, the broad equity market measured by the Russell 3000 was up a little over 3%. And our domestic equities were up 0.4 tenths of a percent. Much of that underperformance came from Sam's. I think you've probably heard me talk about them frequently because they are often outperforming and sometimes underperforming. They're a very active manager with very strong security selection. While the near-term numbers have been underperforming, if you look all the way over to the right at 10 years, they've contributed 17.3% versus the broad equity market at 15.4%. So they really continue to be a driving force behind our long-term numbers, and so we're comfortable with that performance. Looking at year-to-date and 1 year, you'll see at the top, year-to-date, the composite is up 15.3, outperforming both allocation and policy, as well as 1 year performance, where we're up 12.6 at 11%. So domestic equities have been up strongly, and we do keep an eye on that. We are positioned so that we have diversity across the global market. So in addition to our domestic equity, we have exposure to international equity and emerging market, which you'll see on page 6. Both the international equity markets and emerging markets have lagged the U.S. market. So that is also a reason why in the short term we've been lagging. But you can see that the international and the emerging markets year-to-date and 1 year have been adding value, and we continue to believe that U.S. valuations are stretched and that by having the additional exposure globally, we would expect better long-term risk-adjusted returns. On page 7, we've got our fixed income returns. Fiscal year-to-date, we are lagging. We don't expect fixed income to be a driving part of returns going forward as the fixed income markets have been a really higher than average return over the last several years as interest rates have moved lower. So expectations of what they can contribute going forward have been reduced. And you can see some of that in our very high-quality position. We have 2%. It's about a quarter of the way down on the left. You'll see Breckenridge Treasury. So this is high-quality U.S. government bonds, which have a lot of interest rate exposure. We've reduced that to 2, but it's been one of the highest performers. And history will tell you that when you see significantly above average returns, these are unlikely to be sustainable. So while there are decent returns coming from fixed income on a 1 year, a 3 year, and longer basis, we are currently expecting lower returns from traditional fixed income and have given some exposure to more flexible and opportunistic mandates. Finally, on page 8, we have the private markets, where short-term performance is really less important, and the benchmarks are very broad and diverse, so it doesn't necessarily reflect the exact strategies that we have allocated to, which tend to be, but not all of them, more aligned with our UU values and mission. So it's more important on the private market side to look at the longer-term performance. It is adding return between 7.5% to over 9.5% on a 3 to 5 year basis. But really, the returns come over the very long term, and it's more of a diversifier against the broad market. So to sum it up on page 9, the endowment overall returned negative 0.9%, short-term performance that left us at the bottom, but year-to-date we rank in the second quartile, and importantly, that long-term performance over the 10-year time period, the portfolio ranked in the top two-thirds of its peers. And so we are comfortable with positioning and happy with the record that we've achieved. And importantly, we're getting to the business that's at hand. I'm going to move to slide 10 to talk about what exactly, other than reviewing performance, we discussed at the most recent investment committee meeting. I think the first bullet point is extremely important. I think all of you have heard Kathy Mulvey and myself talking about our efforts to integrate the committees in terms of an integrated discussion, keeping our responsibilities very focused on where our expertise is. But importantly, we had approved in the adopted socially responsible investing guidelines, and they now have been forwarded to the UUA board for approval, which we expect. This was effort on all hands on both committees, discussing and reaching a point where we all think we're poised to position the Common Endowment Fund and the UUA in leadership roles regarding socially responsible investing. So I will let Kathy talk about that as well. And then from an IC committee, action-oriented decision, we did approve an allocation to from our short-duration bond, which is essentially cash or money market instruments, to StoneCastle FICA for Impact Fund. I think it's a worthy highlight because FICA for Impact Fund is a very high quality, stable, market oriented short-term fund, but it achieves that return by investing solely through community banks. And community banks really represent the majority of community finance at the local level, where many of the agencies and the groups that we would like to see have access to financing, that's where they get it from, if not the large money center banks. And so we think that this is a great way to have our funds working out there in the field, so to speak, to help provide the important access to finance, and we're really pleased with that decision. But that's enough from me on the IC side. I'm going to turn it over to Kathy Mulvey, and she can talk more about the other important things we accomplished in November. Kathy, it's all yours.
All right, great. Thanks a lot, Kathleen. And just to echo that the work that our committees have been doing to integrate and also to ensure that we have guidelines about how we're incorporating UU values into our investing has just been critically important. And you know, we see that reflected in the updated socially responsible investing guidelines, which take into account decisions that have been made at General Assembly that affect and guide and define what values we should be advancing through our investments. And it also, those guidelines, so they provide, they give us a real solid grounding as to what we should be doing in terms of security selection in our directly managed accounts, and as well as in as well as in commingled accounts, and it also helps to shape what issues and what priorities we have for our shareholder advocacy, which remains an area where the Common Endowment Fund is really playing an outsized role for in terms of the amount of impact that we have. And we also will talk more about the third leg of the stool, which is community investing. So we did approve at this meeting, the Socially Responsible Investing Committee approved a $100,000 investment in Capital for Change, which is actually a fund that was formed through a merger of three existing community development financial institutions in Connecticut just 3 years ago. And so it is serving the affordable housing market and also loaning on issues such as residential and commercial energy improvements and home renovations. So it's really a critically having a really strong impact in the state of Connecticut, and that was an exciting investment to be able to make. The Socially Responsible Investing Committee then recommended, and the Investment Committee approved an increase in our allocation for community investing from 1% to 5% of our portfolio. So that's a significant jump, and it reflects the thinking and work that we've been doing over the past couple of years to really consider how best to reflect UU values in our investments and how to have a greater impact on issues such as racial justice and economic and equity in our society. So that was a great and exciting move. And then we've also been looking at negative screening and how effective the criteria that we use to translate our guidelines into screening are, and basically putting in place a schedule such that we will be reviewing those criteria on a regular basis and also analyzing what impact that screening has on the performance of the Common Endowment Fund. So it was a really, really excellent, another excellent meeting, and we have a roadmap ahead for how our two committees are going to be working together over the coming year and continuing and looking at how we put onto the calendar on a quarterly basis the key issues that we need to be grappling with within each committee and then within the joint committee. And I'll turn it back to Kathleen and Andrew for anything to add.
The only things that I would add or really echo exactly what you said, Kathy, about how much we're accomplishing together. I think that the community investing allocation is an important one, and much of the reason why we on the IC side felt comfortable going up to 5% is because at least half of that allocation we would expect to earn a market rate of return or better. And I think that's an important statement, one, because we want to make sure we get the best returns, but also that we have confidence in our ability to identify community investments that will be able to achieve a return, that have an investment objective, and it's a good way for us to get our funds to work in a competitive way, and all of that is becoming much more feasible as I think investors and asset owners alike understand that there's much to be made by reaching out to groups that have never had access to financing with innovative and important ideas for the community. That also with the report on negative screening, what we've learned so far and why we want to keep up with it is that our work with Sustainalytics so far has been having a positive impact relative to broad market performance. So we've done a lot of work on trying to understand the importance of not reducing the universe too small, but putting in the right criteria, which we really wouldn't be able to identify without working so closely with the folks on the SRIC. So it really is a benefit for all of us to have our different areas of expertise, but to be consulting and discussing and working together. And it makes me very excited about what we can accomplish in the future. That's really all I wanted to add. Andrew, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
No, that's perfect. Yeah, I don't have much to add. That was an excellent report of what we've been working on. So, give us a second here. I'm going to unmute everybody.
All guests have been unmuted.
Okay, and then we can take some questions and answers. And if for some reason you can't get your question in, you individually can control the muting on your line by hitting star 6. So if we're not hearing you, you're probably muted. So star 6 will unmute you. But I'll open it up for questions.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes. My name is Bill Baker, Blacksburg, Virginia, and I am always worried about the cost of investing. And I know companies like Vanguard and Fidelity, you could keep your cost of investment down to about 0.3%, depending on what mutual fund or ETF that you invest in. Now, I notice you're investing in private firms that probably cost close to 1 or 1.5%. How do you respond to that? I notice you just went to Stonecastle FICA from Fidelity. I would think that would cost, the cost of investing would be more.
Do you want to take that one, Kathleen?
No, I'm happy to. But again, if you're not actually asking the question, could you mute your phone so that everyone can hear? It's a good question. If you look at really the difference, looking at overall performance on page 5, when you look at the composite return, at a gross level, which is the top green line, all of that is the performance without the fee. When you take out the fee, that net of performance, which is the second green line, you see that roughly the cost of active management is really about 100 basis points. There are some additional custodian fees, but in general, our ability to achieve those longer 10-year returns where we are essentially keeping up with the market or beating it come from our ability as a large endowment fund to get the best institutional fees and get the best active managers. We've also been through a very long period where fees are starting to come down even for active managers. We're seeing that right now, particularly on the private market side, because it does tie your money up for a longer time frame. But also working with our consultant, we are generally able to get negotiated fees that are more favorable because of our size. And we believe that active management, particularly in more volatile environments, tends to outperform. Yes, you can get exposure to the broad market inefficiently, but the last couple of decades have really been strong upward markets. Valuations are very stretched, and this is not the time that we think it would make sense, given that our long-term performance, net of fees, is demonstrating at least market, if not better, performance. We appreciate the question, Sal.
Thank you.
This is Lucia. Can I jump in, too?
Sure.
Hello? Sure. So I guess going back to the slide on page 4, I do want to note that the index returns are most attractive in an up market. Ultimately, especially if you go back to some of the wildly overpriced markets, and I think 1999 was a fabulous example where the technology sector had grown to be something close to 40% of the stock market, which was really just based on artificially high valuation. And so when those kinds of things are correct and technology becomes, something more in the 20s again, the loss to an index investor is typically much deeper and longer than it is to an active investor. So if you look on page 4, you can sort of see some of the benefit that came to the Common Endowment Fund from active management in 2008-2009. You see the outperformance there in 2009, and it is just true that the last decade has been an unusually long period of market expansion, in large part due to central bank intervention creating a low and negative interest rate environment in much of the world, pushing people into equity. So we believe in the market cycle and the value of active management.
Thanks, Lucia.
Any other questions?
Hi, this is Suzanne Hennig from Columbia, Maryland. My question is about the socially responsible investment team guidelines. Are those available now for us to look at?
Hi, this is Kathy. I don't think they are available yet. They have a few refinements to make. One is to incorporate a reference to the by appendix to the General Assembly decisions that have happened on which the policy or guidelines are based, and the other is to incorporate by reference the community investing policy. So so I believe that with the approval of both the Socially Responsible Investing Committee and the Investment Committee, those are being forwarded to the Board of Trustees for approval. I'm not sure if Andrew or Lucia has information about timing as to when that'll be on the agenda.
I don't yet know which board agenda those will appear on, but I'm going to guess it's more than likely going to be the January board agenda. Obviously the existing guidelines are available, and once the board materials are published. The draft will be, you know, the board often does have questions, so you know, it's possible that there will be further but they should be available to see in the not too distant future.
Thank you.
And we can make sure that that the link to the current guidelines that are in effect is circulated with Susan Halbert's help.
This is Valerie. I have a question about the short-term investment of the cash.
The new allocation.
Fixed income. Have in regard to the increased community investing allocation for this Stone Castle, have you considered investing in any credit unions?
So some of this is Kathy, I believe that so many most of the investments in the community investing portfolio are community development financial institutions. I know that we have had we've had an ongoing investment in self-help credit union. I think that we still use that for any of the community investing allocation that is in a particular investment. And again, that's where the community investment portion of the portfolio is invested is available on the UUC website.
Yes, yeah, so the credit unions have always been a core.
Hi, Katie.
Hello. If we had an investment in affordable housing program for homeless here that other foundations in the area were going into, how would we free that up for your consideration as an investment for the coming endowment fund?
That's a great question, and so we currently our community investing guidelines, again, I believe are available on the website, or a description of what kinds of investments we would consider in the community investing portion of the portfolio is available there. But if there's a particular potential investment that you'd like to bring to our attention, at the moment, the best way to do that would be to bring it through a socially responsible investing committee member, Vanessa Lowe, who's a longtime specialist in community investing. She may actually be on the call today. And you can get her information on the Common Endowment Fund website. We are looking to roll out a process whereby the funds or people nominating the funds can actually, there'll be an actual application form available on the website, but we haven't created that yet. So the best way is to be in touch with the committee and alert us to the opportunity.
Well, it depends on how fast things move here. If you roll out fast here.
That's great. Yeah, and we do, Vanessa leads a process of due diligence for any potential investment where she assesses it against the criteria that we have in place, the guidelines that we have in place for community investing, and makes a recommendation. And when those investments fall within the guidelines, the Socially Responsible Investing Committee can make those decisions to invest and report on them to the investment committee. And occasionally there are opportunities that come up that are exciting and more innovative ways to advance UU values that don't exactly fit within our community investing guidelines, and those would be if socially responsible investing committee wants to advocate for those, we put forth a recommendation to the investment committee to consider those investments.
Hi, this is Steve White from the Santa Monica Church. I'd like to just... Hello?
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, I just would like to put in our endorsement and satisfaction with Santa Monica's direct investment in self-help federal credit union. And we found that one of their community developments was for a food distribution center in South Los Angeles, and it turns out that our social action committee has some joint projects going with that same group to be well coordinated with our faith and action efforts.
That's great. And sorry, this is Kathy. I did just in response to that convergence around social action, and also Katie's question from San Diego. Please also be aware of the matching program of the Common Endowment Fund. So if your own congregation has a community investment, you can apply for matching funds through the Common Endowment Fund.
Oh, great.
This is Dave Carlson from Orange Coast.
Mike Frank.
UU Church.
Why don't you go ahead, Dave, and it will be Mike after that. Dave next.
Okay, yeah, Dave Carlson. I chair the Endowment Committee for Orange Coast Unitarian in Costa Mesa, California. One of the questions that we get from the congregation is what kind of underperformance premium to market do we experience because of our socially responsible investment program that aligns the investments with our values? Is there a way of estimating that?
Well, Kathy, I'll let you add on, but my response is that one of the reasons why we show you our performance relative to our peers, which over the long term has at least been median, if not higher, is peers who don't use the same socially responsible guidelines. So we're
correct.
Actually competing with those folks and doing quite well. And then as a result of looking at the report we saw in November from the subcommittee that looked into how our screening criteria is impacting the performance or the fund, we actually found that it's been a positive. So I really think that it doesn't hinder us at all, and that by creating stronger criteria that becomes more best practice throughout the industry, you'll see that there probably is going to be less distinction, particularly as companies begin to appreciate how important it is to be working beyond just profit, and that can influence their equity returns as well. That's coming from a market advocate, but I think we're seeing a lot of changes take place around the globe that will be impacting returns, and I think our ability to have been doing so for so long puts us at the forefront of talking about how these important can be a positive for returns. Kathy, I don't know if you want to add anything there.
Sure. I mean, just to add on that, the analysis of the screening looks at what the impact of screening out the companies that aren't meeting our socially responsible investing guidelines in the areas of environment, social, and governance performance, and you know how that affects the financial performance. We also the other impacts that we have are in in all of our manager engagements, both for in the public markets and in the private markets. We're raising issues and really forcing the managers to and supporting the managers to innovate and offer offer products that enable us to reflect our values. And then the shareholder advocacy side is another incredibly valuable impact that you get from the investment in the fund, and that means that we are leading engagements on climate change with leading and participating engagements on climate change with companies called the Climate Action 100 Plus, which are the most high emissions companies, so oil and gas and utility companies. And this is an initiative that now includes something like 360 investors with $35 trillion in assets under management. Our investments add a small fraction to that overall amount of money, but our leadership in that arena is enormous. And we are also filing on issues of lobbying disclosure and election spending with several companies, so Ford Motor and ExxonMobil, Abbott and BlackRock, just a few examples. So those are additional values. That's value that you get in aligning the investments with UU values.
Yeah, this is Dave Carlson again. I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, both Kathy and Kathleen have spoken directly to the UU values side of it, and I just wanted to say, from a broad market perspective, over the last decade, there have been detailed studies done in the university setting by some global investment banks like Goldman Sachs and by the investment consultants and CPAs of the world, and consistently the finding is that there is not a value penalty for ESG investing. So I just wanted to throw that in there as well.
Yeah, this is Dave Carlson. I'm looking at page 9. A 10-year time period, the portfolio ranks in the top two-thirds, which obviously is below the median. And the question is, I guess your answer is that none of that performance has to do with our socially responsible investing. And again, there is no one that questions the nobility of our aligning our investments with our values. No one is questioning that. The question I get is, are we paying a premium for that stance, or are we staying even or improving?
Yeah, thank you, Steve, for clarifying that. And I would say that there's a strong arbitrariness to the beginning and ending points of them, and they can change dramatically based on those beginning and ending points. And in the 10 years is a piece of the history, and what you're seeing being below median, I think there is more a reflection of timing and asset allocation than anything that relates in any way to the inclusion of values into the portfolio.
So the answer is allocation and management, not our commitment to aligning our investment strategy with values.
If you're looking to say is on what can we hang the under the below median performance for that specific 10-year period? That is what I would say that it relates to the specific beginning and ending points there. Going back to November 2009 and asset allocation. Decisions in that, incorporated there and the starting and ending point.
So you're saying
jump in now. This is Mike Kramer, Golden, Colorado. Question for Kathleen with respect to the performance over the last quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You did make reference to the World Trade War and the slowing economy both in the U.S. and worldwide. But those are conditions that all of the funds faced. They're not unique to our fund. Can you tell us a little more specifically how we wound up at the very bottom rank this quarter? What differentiates us?
Good question, and what I was trying to describe was the back and forth, the volatility that we've seen in the markets broadly, and you are correct, all funds are experiencing the whipsaw of the market right now on any given day, and it's how the individual manager responds to that. All of our managers are segregated and allocated to different specific areas. The majority of the underperformance is really coming from the growth equity manager. So I think I referenced on page 5, Sands, who is a large cap growth investor. They've had solid returns over the last 10 years. They're very active. They produce a lot of returns. We are disciplined about our rebalancing, always bringing them back into line so that we don't experience too much when they underperform. But growth equities, as I mentioned, in terms of U.S. valuations, that is one area where I think there is risk to valuations in the U.S. and why it's so important, as the previous questioner mentioned, to have could we mute our phones if you're not actually asking the question? So that manager in particular is causing the performance in this short period of time. They've been with us a long time, and so we know their long-term record, and they're part of our entire diversified portfolio. Right now, that is what is causing that short-term underperformance, and we're comfortable with it, knowing we've been here again. And I believe when the market comes back to the upside, they generally perform very well. So yes, it's primarily that one manager right now and the allocation to international equity and emerging markets, which have lagged the U.S. equity markets, and probably relative to our peers, we have less U.S. and relatively more international and EM. For the long term and working with our consultants, NEPC, we feel this is the proper asset allocation for the long term. I hope that answers your question.
This is Dave Carlson again. The 99th percentile versus peers seems distressing. My question is, what did we do, if anything, when that performance measure was revealed to us.
We had a discussion about SANS at the committee meeting, and we go back to the consultants to review their exposure in technology, if there's been any changes in strategy, but we've also learned from our long-term experience that making short-term decisions based on short-term performance doesn't add value in the long term. And we've seen SANS have this kind of number. And importantly, it's not simply SANS, but they had the largest degree of relative underperformance. It is that weighting in international equity where the international equity broad market was up about 2%, and we were up about 1.5%, and emerging markets were actually a slight negative. So it's that asset allocation weighting in the short term that was probably a bigger driver than just that one manager. But we reviewed the asset allocation, we reviewed what's going on with the individual manager, and we have the experience of having worked with this manager for a number of years. And for that reason, yes, 99 is a disappointing number, but when I look at the when I look at the returns overall of 1 point for the 5th percentile, negative 0.3 for the 95th, it was a pretty challenging market in terms of where you're going to get your returns. And this is really a function of valuations in the marketplace. It's harder and harder to eke out those enticing returns, as Lucia mentioned. You know, the strong up markets of 20% or more are not what we are expecting in the future. Long-term expected returns for 4.2% for fixed
income. Again, this is Dave Krausen. The value of using peers as opposed to absolute is, in fact, to compensate that everybody is in the same environment. We're all seeing the same volatility. We're all seeing the Trump bump. We're seeing the distress in the market with the trade war. So, you know, it's noble to look at investment on a percentage basis, but what you've done very well is to use the peer environment, which normalizes for the chaos that we've seen in the marketplace. It will be difficult to explain to the congregation, in my opinion, which I will not do based on this last quarter, but in general, underperformance, when we're really looking at comparing ourselves to our peers. Did any of that make sense?
It does. The peers gives us a good sense of how we're doing relative to other endowments who may take a more aggressive approach. But the individual performance, looking at the longer-term numbers and the year-to-date numbers, I really do discount one quarter's performance. But when you're looking at... Could I finish what I'm saying? Is that at 12.6%, with domestic equities up 15%, we're actually doing very well. And that composite incorporates both equity, VIX, and private markets. And I'm sorry, Lucia, please go ahead.
Well, I certainly hear what you're saying, but the 38th percentile of year-to-date and somewhere based on the last bullet point, somewhere in the 60 percentile over a 10-year period, doesn't seem very satisfying in an explanation against peers. I value very much what you're doing, but this gets increasingly difficult to explain to the endowment committee.
Understood. Understood, and I appreciate your comments. What I would say is that, as Lucia pointed out, we're looking at numbers that are as of October 31. So it's all arbitrary in terms of time. If we looked at it in June, the 10-year number would be much higher.
Yeah.
Ultimately, our goal is to have at least median performance. And then for different time periods, often above median, and only have short periods of time, like one quarter, where you might be underperforming. So I understand how difficult it is, but it's the period of time, our confidence in the manager selection, and our working with our consultant on the asset allocation for the long term.
Well, but the 10-year period is below the median as well. So this notion that there's an arbitrary start and end point doesn't really hold logically when we're looking at year-to-date, quarter-to-date, and 10-year period.
So, but the reason that you need to look at multiple periods is that so it is an arbitrary period because 2008-2009 was an extraordinary time, and which month you choose to start in has a big difference. And you just completely ignored the more recent performance where it's well above median or very close to median. And those are 3- and 5-year numbers, which I will say in the, you know, sort of institutional consulting world, they tend to focus on 1, 3, and 5, not 10. 10 is meaningful, but because in a period of market swings, which we were in 10 years ago, it can be very arbitrary. 1, 3, and 5 often get greater weight. And if you look at the 1, 3, and 5, what you see is exactly what Kathleen said, median or above median.
So then I suggest in the next commentary we include 3 and 5, perhaps in addition to 10, because what you're saying is the real performance, and I'm okay with that, as long as we are shown other things than what is currently on page 9.
We can apologize that the bullet didn't pull out everything. It is on page 3, and in her remarks, Kathleen did highlight it. But you're right, it isn't in the final bullet point, but it is on page 3.
Don't have any other unanswered questions
from Mike.
3 o'clock. So anybody want a last question?
Yeah, I've got one follow-up. It's Mike. The SANS manager is being pointed at as the cause of the quarterly drop. Does that manager get penalized in their fee, performance fee, or is it a fixed rate?
It is not a performance fee. It's not a performance fee.
Well, you said those fees are negotiated, so maybe that's something the committee could take some consideration of, that when somebody drops us to dead bottom, there ought to be a penalty for that, I would think.
So, then they might want to renegotiate when you look at their 3-year and 5-year number. You have to understand that what we're doing is making sure that the investment process and the resources that the manager is using contribute to a long-term track record that is repeatable and that we have confidence in. And it is disappointing in a short period of time, but we know Sands well, and they're certainly not the only reason for the current lagging. I highlighted it simply because they tend to be up and very down, as growth equity managers are. More the weight of the performance comes from international equity and the emerging market right now. The national allocation. So I understand it's complex. I hope we've been able to answer your questions fully, and we'll work toward better clarity and focus next time.
Yeah, and if we have any questions that weren't answered on the call, this is Andrew McGeorge. You can feel free to send this to me, and we'll get back to you with answers. My contact information is on the UUCEF website. So thank you, Kathleen and Kathy. I think we'll wrap there for today. And I don't know, any closing comments from our chairs or?
No, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
All right. Bye-bye.